Welcome to the November 2009 session of the International MD Support Group. I'm Dan Roberts, and this month Dr. Ed Huggett and I are coming to you from the annual meeting of the American Academy of Ophthalmology in Orlando, Florida. We're joined also by presenter Ellen Troyer and sponsor Liz Charnecht from the Macular Degeneration Foundation, all of us in the same room. This is a historic occasion. We're all here in Orlando this week to update our knowledge and to associate with others in the field of eye care, all for the purpose of serving you as effectively as possible. Last month, I also attended the annual meeting of the American Academy of Ophthalmology in San Francisco. For those who are interested in following the latest science, I've summarized and printed in your newsletter selected abstracts and summaries of the AMD-related posters, papers, and sessions presented at that meeting. This may be more information than you may want or need, but it's better to have too much than too little. You'll find that the most numerous recent developments have been in pharmacology. But promising work is also being done in the fields of nutrition, surgery, genetics, and low vision rehabilitation. Right now, we're kind of in a holding pattern with many clinical trials underway. We're looking forward to some exciting breakthroughs during the next couple of years, and those trials are beginning to bear fruit. So be patient, it's coming. Meanwhile, one of the few proactive steps we can all take against AMD is maintaining good nutrition. And that's why we've invited Ellen Troyer back, as she helps us to separate fact from fiction in making the best and safest choices in our diets. Ellen is our resident expert on nutrition. You'll remember hearing her excellent presentation on body weight and eye disease last February, and we're happy to have her back again. Ellen Troyer is the Chief Executive Officer of BioCentrics Incorporated, a leading manufacturer of nutritional products designed for people with low vision. She is also an executive board member of the Optometric Nutrition Society, a voting member of the Council for Responsible Nutrition, and an active member of the Association for Research in Vision and Ophthalmology. As one of the country's foremost nutrition experts, her educational presentations are in demand everywhere, and we're fortunate to be able to catch her here in Orlando to spend some time with us. Ellen, welcome back. We look forward to your presentation today.
Thanks, Dan. It's always a pleasure to talk to this group. And, you know, we decided today that we would focus on food instead of supplements. And, of course, I'll work in a little bit of information on supplements. But primarily today's talk is going to be food-focused, and I hope I can separate all of the facts versus fiction where food is involved. The Institute of Medicine basically establishes the RDAs, and as well as the FDA gets involved. And, you know, sometimes I think they make this far more difficult than it need be, because we all understood what RDA meant, the required daily amount. Then they changed it about 10 years ago to dietary reference intakes. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think anybody knows what that means. So basically all it is the adequate amount of nutrients that you're going to get from food every day to stay alive. It has nothing to do with what you need, the amount you need to be healthy and prevent disease. That's just basically to keep you alive. So I put together a little bit of information here that I think might help you stay healthier. We kind of recommend that you get 40% of your daily calories from, and I said mostly, really I mean all low glycemic carbohydrates, but that's not really, as one of my employees said, that's just not feasible for a 25-year-old woman. So, you know, just do the best you can with these carbs, and try and get most of your carbohydrates from vegetables if possible, instead of cakes and cookies and all those other things. 30% of your daily calories from polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fatty acids, from fish, nuts, and trans fat-free vegetable oils, and limit saturated fats. Saturated fats come from all meat. So I am a big proponent of eating meat. Just try and cut the fat off if you can possibly do that. And 30% of your calories from really high quality protein, including lean meats, fish, eggs, and carbs. So if you do that, you're going to find you probably won't have much of a weight problem. And the new CDC Health and Human Service recommendation is now 9 to 13 servings of vegetables and fruits every day to meet the adequate dietary nutrient intake. Now remember, that's just to stay alive. So I don't know about you guys, but eating 9 to 13 servings can be difficult for a lot of people, including me. We're going to take a look at the fat-soluble vitamins, and the reason I put this slide up here for you is so that you understand these are the vitamins that your body will store in your liver primarily. So you want to be careful, whether it's food or supplements, that you don't go over this safe upper limit. And with vitamin A, the adequate intake is 2,500 international units a day, and that safe upper limit is 10,000. This is particularly important for us as we age. We can't possibly exist, if we want to drive our cars at night, without adequate vitamin A. However, we now know that vitamin A is linked to increased risk of hip fracture in older people, and one of the reasons is that it interferes with vitamin K absorption, which is another fat-soluble vitamin, and we've not always known that. So just be careful that you're not, you know, not eating foods that contain too much vitamin A, and I'm going to show you what they are in a moment, but just not taking supplements that even get close to that 10,000 international units. Vitamin E is so controversial, and unfortunately, the FDA, about 20 years ago or more, decided that the only part of vitamin E that actually mattered was alpha-tocopherol. Well, there's 8 parts to the vitamin E molecules, and alpha-tocopherol is just one of them. Unfortunately, when you look at a supplement fact label, the amount you're seeing is only about alpha-tocopherol. So you're going to start to see in the supplement world people changing that and dramatically lowering the amounts that you see on supplement fact boxes, because they're going to start including the rest of the tocopherol family and certainly all the tocotrienols. Vitamin D, I know you hear about every day of your lives, because we have vitamin D deficiency is almost a pandemic in this country at this point, and that's because we've all stopped going out in the sun and we cover ourselves with clothes and sunscreen, so we just don't get enough sun on our skin. Personally, I think everybody needs at least 10 to 15 minutes of midday sun on as much skin as you can expose without being arrested for nudity. So get out in the sun and get as much sun as you can every day for at least 10 or 15 minutes. Vitamin K deficiency is becoming more recognized all over the country. One of the reasons is, as we age, a lot of people are put on blood thinners, Coumadin particularly, and doctors tell them, because that is a blood thinner, not to eat dark green vegetables because they're high in vitamin K, which also is responsible for part of the clotting mechanism. So it becomes a double-edged sword. Personally, I would ask my doctor to, you know, decide how many dark green veggies you'll commit to eat every day, and ask your doctor to adjust that Coumadin to match that amount. It's because this vitamin K is critical. We now know what a big player it is in bone health. So, you know, if we want to cut down on the risk of bone fractures, we really have to get vitamin K. Now we're going to look at foods that are really high in, certainly in vitamin A here. And by far, the best source of vitamin A is liver of any kind. Liver and onions particularly is a dish that many of us still love to eat, and it's very high in vitamin A. If you had one serving a week of liver and onions, you probably wouldn't need any more vitamin A in your diet. And cod liver oil is the next best source. Our mothers, for people my age, lined us up when we were little and gave us a spoon of cod liver oil, and people were amazingly healthy during those years. So liver and onions, chicken liver, animal livers of any kind are great sources of vitamin A. Another form of vitamin A comes from beta-carotene. That's called proform vitamin A. And the reason that this happens is the body's need for vitamin A is so powerful, it will convert beta-carotene to retinol, but only if you are deficient in vitamin A. If you are not deficient in vitamin A, there is no conversion whatsoever. And, you know, that's vitamin, the beta-carotene is carrots and all the orange vegetables, and even broccoli is very high in beta-carotene. Unfortunately, the supplement industry a few years ago, and maybe 15 or 20 years ago, started using beta-carotene as the source of vitamin A and vitamins. Well, we don't want to do that now, particularly in supplements designed for vision patients, because too much beta-carotene interferes with lutein and zeaxanthin that you need for your macular pigment. So avoid those formulations that include a lot of beta-carotene. I personally believe that sunshine, as we said, is by far the best source of vitamin D. And make sure you're wearing your shades when you go out in the sun to protect your eyes. I just recently increased the amount of vitamin D up to 2,000 international units in our Macula Complete, just because we now link vitamin D to so many degenerative diseases. So I want to make sure that everybody gets enough. And the wonderful thing about the sun and the way the body responds is if you have enough vitamin D, your skin will not convert sun to vitamin D, so you don't ever get too much from the sun. So that's one of the wonderful parts of the human body and nature. We're going to move right into vitamin E, which we touched briefly on before. The best sources of vitamin E are pumpkin seeds. I love that. Seeds of any kind, almonds, wheat germ, soy, palm. Annatto is the new rage because it includes the complete spectrum of the vitamin E tocotrienols. So I'm very excited about that. And we've already covered on a supplement fact box that the only thing that amount means is alpha tocopherol. Well, you've got to get all the gamma, delta, beta, both tocopherol and tocotrienols to really have vitamin E properly balanced in your diet. And vitamin K, again, is plentiful in dark green vegetables and kale. And, you know, these things are also high in lutein as well. So you want to make sure that you're getting plenty of these in your diet. And, you know, MDs are becoming more vitamin and nutrient savvy, you know, about this kind of stuff. And we're finding that they're willing to work with their patients on adjusting their blood thinners if the patient demands it. And unfortunately, they don't always think to do it. So just understand you need vitamin K just to protect your bones. Vitamin C, which is still everyone's most favorite vitamin, the best sources, interestingly enough, are not orange juice, which most people think if they drink a glass of orange juice every day, they're getting plenty of vitamin C. The adequate intake is 90 milligrams a day, and the safe upper limit is listed by the Institute of Medicine at 2,000 milligrams. I personally think you can go up to 5 and not worry about it too much. But if you're getting 500 a day, you're probably in a supplement and, you know, another 500 or 1,000 from your daily diet, you're going to be just fine in the vitamin C area. Oh, sweet bell peppers are actually by far the best source of vitamin C. So, and now they're so plentiful in the markets in all these beautiful color ranges. Now they even come in not just green and red and orange and yellow. Now there are a beautiful shade of purple bell peppers. So a lot of people eat them raw, but eat them often. The B vitamins, particularly as we age, I cannot stress to you how important that it is that we get plenty of B vitamins in our diet, particularly for those that are higher risk of AMD and Alzheimer's. And the reason that's true is B vitamins protect the DNA and the RNA. If there is damage done, our body will provide something called uracil, and it will correct all the cracks in the DNA if you're not B vitamin deficient. So it prevents these genes from switching on. So just make sure if you're supplementing that you get a multiple or a full B complex that includes all of the B vitamins. Folate, B6, and B12 are particularly important to manage homocysteine levels. And as we know, and I think we've talked about this before on these meetings, homocysteine is linked to an increased risk of dry AMD becoming wet, elevated homocysteine. So you need to make sure that you keep that in mind. And so we're going to talk about foods that are high in B vitamins, but that's really important to you people who have AMD or are at risk for AMD. The two best sources of B vitamins are blackstrap molasses and brewer's yeast. But unfortunately, most of us don't consume much of either of those, although, you know, molasses is probably, it's also high in iron, and so, you know, a spoonful of molasses a few times a week is a great food source of nutrients, so keep that in mind. And, of course, beer is made out of brewer's yeast, so all you beer drinkers out there will love knowing that if you didn't know it before. Beans. All dried beans are excellent sources of B vitamins, and if you combine them with rice, they form a complete amino acid protein. So we find, certainly in third world countries, all have diets that include a tremendous amount of beans. And, you know, it's interestingly enough, it's not just rice that you can combine them with. Beans and sweet potatoes are a great vegetarian dinner because they form a complete protein. So you can get all the protein that you need and get all the fiber that you need in a meal by just putting a lot of beans on top of baked sweet potatoes. And it's also delicious. Beef, poultry, and fish are also sources of B vitamins. They're sources of a lot of things, carnitine, CoQ10, and lipoic acid. So those vegetarians who don't eat any of these foods really do need to supplement daily with those nutrients. My children groan when I show them this slide, but Brussels sprouts are also very high in some of those B vitamins, but they're also high, interestingly enough, in beta carotene, vitamin C, vitamin K, manganese, fiber, potassium, iron, and they even contain some omega-3 fatty acid, EPA, DHA. So learn to love Brussels sprouts. If memory serves, I think one year at Christmas time we talked about roasting Brussels sprouts with olive oil and garlic. And if you just put them in a plastic zip bag and put a little olive oil and a little pressed garlic in, and then cut them in half, put them cut side down on a baking sheet and roast them for about 10 minutes, they're delicious. So even those people who claim to hate Brussels sprouts seem to like them that way. Well, it's time to move right into minerals now, and as you probably mostly all know, minerals are from the earth and they cannot be made by living organisms. So we have to get all of our minerals from plants that pick them up from the minerals in the soil. So that's how if we don't eat a whole lot of particularly vegetables, we're probably almost always going to be deficient in certain minerals. Here are the adequate intakes and the safe upper limits of minerals. Calcium has become very controversial. We're finding that older people don't need nearly as much calcium as we thought they did. In fact, There are a lot of nutritionally oriented doctors who are recommending that you not supplement with a lot of calcium because it's very difficult for the body to absorb. The safe upper limit's 2,500 milligrams every day, and most people are now thinking that about 1,000 milligrams is certainly adequate, and probably 500 to 600 is a far better choice. I'm not going to go through this entire list. I'm going to pick out the ones that I think are particularly important to those people interested in eye disease. Copper is huge for you people. You have to have adequate copper in order for a tumor or your eye to form a new vascular system. So if you can just supply very small amounts of copper or deplete the body of copper, angiogenesis becomes almost impossible because it is dependent on copper intake. So we are in the process of cutting copper way back in our supplements, and I'm sure everyone will follow because they usually kind of follow what we do anyway in the eye supplement industry. But you want to make sure, and I know that a lot of people were taking the formulation that Paul Harvey once recommended on the radio, and it included 8 milligrams of copper. Well, the safe upper limit is 7 milligrams. So, and I think he was a wonderful person, and he didn't design these formulations, but the FTC came in, and not only after he died, I think actually it was just before he died, they shut down this company and fined them almost $500,000. So you need to know who you're getting your supplements from. So that's what's real important about copper. Iron is, we do limit for most older people's diets, only because excess iron is linked to heart disease. Manganese is real important because when you combine manganese with just a tiny bit of copper and zinc, you produce something entirely different that works as a major antioxidant both inside the cell and outside the cell. So that's real important. And we'll just skip right down here to zinc. You see the adequate intake is only 11 milligrams a day, and the safe upper limit is 40. So watch those formulations that are still using way too much zinc in them for the vision patients. I think in the new ARID study, two of the arms are only using 25 milligrams. That's far more appropriate. When we talk about calcium, I participated in the Optometric Nutrition Society. In fact, I organized their courses for them. And this week, we had two phenomenal speakers come in to speak to optometrists here at this meeting. And one was out of Wake Forest University, and he's the department chair there, and his name is Dr. Ski Chilton. And the other was out of Colorado State University, and he has published most of the work on the paleo diets and how our ancestors ate. And in both cases, both of these very learned PhDs believe that we should give up dairy products. They're just not good for us. And if we really need to increase the amount of calcium that we eat, oats, broccoli, kale, and sardines are wonderful sources of calcium and far easier to absorb than dairy products. And they have a lot more fiber and a lot less fat. So I know for some of you who have grown up with milk in your diet and who love cheese, I'm asking you to do something very difficult, but cut back as much as you possibly can. Chromium, bran cereal, and green beans are a sensational source of dietary chromium. Chromium deficiency is linked to type 2 diabetes, so since we all seem to be from our diets a little bit susceptible to becoming a type 2 diabetic, get those green beans in your diet. Meats, shellfish, and nuts are great sources of copper, selenium, and zinc. And we've talked about excessive copper being associated with angiogenesis, wet AMD, and all cancerous tumor growth. So you don't want to go overboard on this stuff, but, you know, it's a good way. If you're not taking supplements, you've got to have some meat, shellfish, and nut in your diet. Brown rice is probably one of the best sources of magnesium. So you need some magnesium, you know, to balance the amount of copper that you're getting. So try and incorporate brown rice in your diet whenever you can. These foods are all great sources of iron. But again, as I've mentioned before, excess iron is linked to heart disease in seniors, so go easy on these things. And here we are again with my bottle of blackstrap molasses, prunes up in the right-hand corner, steak, soy, poultry is, interestingly enough, a great source of iron, and so are oysters. And, you know, that might not apply to everyone. Personally, I adore them, so as I get older, I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't be eating quite so many of these things. Green tea is fabulous for us. So if you're not drinking a lot of green tea, learn to like it. You know, I love my morning cup of coffee, but after my two, I own right up sometimes to 3 cups of morning coffee, but try and hold that at 2 max. And then if you have to have a warm drink, switch to green tea. It's just filled with nutrients that we need, particularly for cancer prevention. I love this because most people think that you need to grab a banana if you think you're deficient in potassium. Potatoes are a much better source of potassium. And I found it interesting that the two docs that spoke at this meeting both treated potatoes, frankly, like they were just, you know, the worst things in the world and we should give them up. And I had to remind them that they were great sources of potassium. And, you know, we need potassium, certainly to balance all of the sodium that we all take into our bodies every single day. If you're eating a diet that's high in processed food, you're going to have a tremendous amount of sodium intake, so you've got to balance that with potassium. So I think a potato is, although it is a high glycemic food, particularly if you load it up with some of the things we all like on it, it's not good for you. But just a potato a few times a week, I still think, is a great dietary habit. And here we go with one of my most favorite things. If you don't like sardines, learn to like them. They are, in the world of fish oil crazy people, they are by far the best source of the fatty acids in fish oil. You can buy really nice quality sardines for about $1.50 a can, and they contain 2,000 milligrams of omega-3 EPA DHA. And that's about the same amount as in 4 concentrated fish oil capsules. But they include protein, iron, zinc, and B vitamins. So look at what a great source of nutrients a little tin of sardines can be. And I found that I particularly love them, the ones that are packed in olive oil. So, and it's certainly a taste that some people have to acquire, but they're great on the budget and just a wonderful source of omega-3. And while I'm here, the fish oil marketers out there are really pushing huge amounts of fish oil right now as disease prevention. The American Heart Association and the Institute of Medicine are really holding the line strong to let the public know that no more than 500 milligrams of EPA DHA is required for disease prevention. And some of these fish oil sellers are telling people they need 2 and 3 grams a day. Well, you don't need that much. And fatty acids are little powerhouses, and it doesn't take that much to be healthy. And we certainly, you know, people talk a lot about balancing omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids, the best way to balance that is to stop eating junk food. If you just kind of stay out of the center of the supermarket, you won't need to consume more than 500 milligrams of EPA DHA a day. So I don't think it makes sense to tell people to go on with your high junk food diets, but just take pop more fish oil capsules. I have an ethical issue with that. Well, we discussed this 500 milligrams a day, so that's all you need. Now, if you have a diagnosed problem with triglycerides, you definitely need more. But it probably won't be your eye doctor who's going to tell you that. That information is going to come from your cardiologist or your internist. There are three types of fish oil here that I want to talk about. The real, natural, unconcentrated fish oil includes 180 milligrams of EPA and 120 milligrams of DHA per 1,000 milligram capsule. It's called 1812, and that's not the overture. That means it's natural fish oil. You can buy it at Costco, and frankly, all of the fish oil that's coming into this country now is certainly safe, and we're doing a real good job of making sure that fish oil is mercury and PCB free. And I think one of the companies recently tested 55 different right-off-the-shelf brands, and they found no mercury or PCB in any. And that was something that some of the real fancy fish oil folks were telling people, oh, you can't take that stuff. It's safe. And, you know, you can buy this stuff for less than $10 a month. So it's a great source. The ethyl ester fish oil, which is concentrated, so you get more EPA and DHA per capsule, is put through a distillation process, like you're making liquor, but instead of distilling corn, they distill this fish oil and concentrate the fatty acids, and it does still have a little bit of alcohol in it. So, and that usually contains about 500 milligrams per capsule. So see, you're getting some more, but not a tremendous amount more. The concentrated triglyceride fish oil that people are selling is, they're calling it natural, but it's not natural at all. It's been distilled. Just first it becomes an ethyl ester fish oil. Then it is because it's been distilled. And then they chemically reattach the glycerol backbone that is removed during the distillation process. So it's not natural fish oil. It's very expensive. And we still don't have enough studies to know whether, in fact, the absorption rate is higher or if it is another new-to-nature molecule, a bit like trans fats were. We just don't know this. And it may prove to be perfectly safe, but at this point, we haven't looked at it long enough. So just know that about fish oil. I still believe the best source of EPA DHA is from eating fish. And here's one of the real problems with fish. We are depleting the natural resources with this fish oil craze that's going on right now. They're not sustainable. There are only so many fish in the sea. So we can probably, because fish, a serving of fish contains about 500 to 1,000 normally. Sardines seem to be particularly high. Milligrams of EPA, DHA, and all these studies that are done are looking at servings of only 2 to 3 times a week to totally change health profiles. So we don't need that much. So let's keep our grandchildren in mind when we start consuming all this fish and try and save some for the next generation or two. Flaxseed oil right now and flax seeds are so out of favor, and it's really too bad. Those fish oil sellers want people to believe that the fatty acids, the omega-3 fatty acids that we find in flaxseed, don't convert to EPA, DHA. Well, I'm here to tell you they're wrong. Yes, they do. Now, the conversion rate's not all that high. Some of the fish oil folks are saying the conversion rate's only 2%. Well, that's not true. It's more like 8 or 9%. But, so, you know, Particularly, eye docs used flax oil to treat dry eyes for years, and the results weren't spectacular, but some patients responded beautifully to this. And flax seeds are great to add to your diet because they are wonderful fiber. So grinding a few flax seeds every morning, but you want to grind them fresh because they are not terribly stable. So if you want to grind some flaxseed every morning and put on your cereal or in your shake or whatever you drink or eat for breakfast, continue to do so because they're good for you, just not in huge amounts. Flax and walnuts both have very protective effects on bone and gut health. So, you know, remember that. Just don't fall for the latest fad. People have been using flax seeds for years, and they're good for us. Here's my new favorite nutrient, which you can get from a glass of red wine. But don't take this too seriously, because you'd have to drink, somebody once said, about 100 glasses of red wine to get any the amount of resveratrol that would keep you healthy. This is being advertised so heavily right now, and it mimics caloric reduction. So, you know, we find that particularly the French seem to be able to eat and drink just terribly rich food and never gain any weight. It's because they do drink red wine with their food. So it's a good idea, and I am not recommending that you drink a bottle of wine every night with your dinner, but a glass every night probably is one of the best things you could do. We have just added 100 milligrams of resveratrol to our Macula Complete formulation just because I'm very impressed with the science. So look for that in when you purchase your next bottle of Mac Complete, if you do. And, you know, also get a little resveratrol from a glass of red wine, and unless drinking alcohol is just not something you like. And if it's not, you can supplement. And it's probably the supplemental resveratrol is just as good or better if you have a tendency to open a bottle of wine and think you need to drink the whole thing. Berries of any kind are good for us. And mix them up. You know, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, cranberries, cherries all include amazing amounts of antioxidants, and they have anti-inflammatory and anti-angiogenic properties that are particularly important to the AMD and diabetic retinopathy patient. Here are my optimal health facts. Consume 9 to 13 servings of fruits and vegetables every day if you possibly can. Now, that's not 9 to 13 different fruits and vegetables. That's servings. And a serving is about a half a cup. 4 to 6 servings of low-glycemic grains and beans. 3 servings of high-quality protein from meat, fish, and eggs. 1 or 2 tablespoons of trans fat-free oils, mostly olive oil. You know, olive oil is so high in omega-9s, we really need to incorporate that in our diet every day. You know, I also think you need a daily well-formulated multiple and fish oil for insurance. But if you think you can eat and consume all of those, and preferably homegrown vegetables and fruits if possible. That's easier to do in some states than others. And certainly limit dairy foods, alcohol, sugar, and high glycemic carbs. Just if you learn to eat that way, you're going to feel better, you're going to be healthier, and you're going to be around to hang out with Dan Roberts and this whole crew. And things I want you to do every day is exercise in some way. And find something to do that you are passionate about. And if you're retired, you know, find a group that a cause that you love and volunteer with them. We have to have that passion for what we do to keep us young and happy. And surround yourself with as many friends and family as possible, because that probably promotes health as well as anything else. And the bottom thing is, find, and I don't care what kind of religion or spiritual group you attach yourself to, but it's good for your health to have some kind of belief system that you share with friends. So thank you so much for your time. This has always been fun, and we're all sitting here at this conference, and we're going to start taking questions now.
Well, this is Dr. Huggett, and I want to just say thank you so much, Ellen, for all the information you gave us. That is just a tremendous amount, and leaves so many areas open for questions. And I also want to thank Dan also for opening up.
Terry from Kendall submits this, and Ellen, I want to bring this question to you. One is, what do you think of L-taurine?
I love taurine. I think it's one of the most important supplements, particularly for the glaucoma patient or anyone with elevated pressure needs to include taurine in their diet. We put it in both of our full spectrum multiples because I think it's good for everyone. Food sources, again, are a little bit difficult. Shellfish seems to have a fair amount of taurine in it. So look for taurine in supplements when you buy them, particularly if you have any form of eye disease.
I have someone else here that would like to ask a question.
Ellen, thank you so much for your presentation. What a wealth of knowledge you have. Factor fiction, is it true that when you steam some of the high-fiber veggies, you actually access the beta-carotene more than fresh?
That's absolutely true. You know, there is a whole new school of thought out there on, they call themselves the raw food folks. And in California, this has really become a big craze, and now there's all these raw food restaurants, and they don't agree that steaming vegetables produces more nutrients. So it's always controversial. Personally, I think it depends on the veggie that you're eating. We know, for instance, that cooked tomatoes have a much higher level of lycopene than raw tomatoes do. So, but I think you have to look at it vegetable by vegetable to understand that.
Ellen, you mentioned resveratrol, and I'm so excited that you've added it into your supplements. Is it true that it affects the telomeres at the end of the chromosome? And this is Liz from Macular Degeneration Foundation.
Thanks, Liz. That is absolutely what the science is showing. So if we want to extend our lifestyles, we cut back on the amount of food that we eat, and we make sure that we're getting enough resveratrol in our diets. You know, all of these, this low-calorie craze now, is when we look at the people who live the longest and are the healthiest all over the world, they are people that consume less than half of our daily intake of calories. So we've got to learn, all of us, to be satiated with fewer calories.
I can always count on Proctor Endowment Home to come up with great questions. Thank you, folks out there. So the question is, officially, how many prunes do you recommend? I want to say you, Ellen, how many do you recommend per day, and how many calories are in?
You know, I don't actually know how many calories are in prunes, but it's very high, as it is in all dried fruits. They are good for us. They include a tremendous amount of iron. You know, a few prunes every day, I'm sure, is good for everyone, two or three. I doubt that we need more than that on a regular daily basis. So definitely add some prunes to your diet. But I think they're so good, we tend to eat them like candy, and then they're not so good for us anymore when we eat too many. So be careful with them.
Okay. I've got two questions here that I'm gonna combine together here. One is from the Lion Center for the Blind. Actually, both of them are. Is resveratrol beneficial for diabetics, and how does it work in the human body?
As we said before, resveratrol mimics caloric restriction, basically, and expands the telomeres that control our aging process. So the best thing that it does is, according to the research that we have now, and remember this is kind of new and people are getting very excited about it, but we are looking at resveratrol as a way to, as an age management supplement particularly, and one that will allow us to live longer. Here I read it. I'm going to read this question. Ed, do you recommend a dietary supplement designed for vision loss, such as Ocuvite? You know, I don't, because Ocuvite doesn't include enough nutrients. And I think these people certainly mean well, but they are not as committed as the smaller companies are, and they tend to buy based on price more than quality, because that's how most big companies work. So that's my opinion about Ocuvite.
I'm going to ask a question of my own, but I certainly don't want to ignore the question that came in from Procter Endowment Home. But before I ask that, let me ask you my question. One is, since a lot of us are dealing with macular degeneration, and really we haven't talked much about prevention in the person themselves with nutritional supplements, and also I guess what triggered this whole question was I saw an article, maybe you can comment more on it, that women that have a genetic history in the family of having macular degeneration will significantly reduce their chances of getting macular degeneration if they take a certain amount of omega-3 fatty acids in their diet. So I guess I want to just use that as a springboard to talk a little bit about, or have you talk a little bit about, prevention and possibly slowing the progression of macular degeneration down, or maybe even stopping the progression of macular degeneration. So while you think about that, let me give you the other question. What can you do to suppress your appetite?
I'll take the first question first. Women and AMD, I think that particularly, as we know, women who carry extra weight and have blue eyes and are blonde are at higher risk for AMD, and unfortunately, those women who have smoked in the past, and hopefully no one smokes now, but those who have smoked in the past are at much higher risk for AMD. So I think they have to pay particular, be just vigilant about their diets. I think that we definitely have proven at this point that a good diet, diet to me is just part of a healthy lifestyle. So if you can clean up your diet and exercise daily and do all the other things that we talked about, I think you will lower your risk of AMD. As far as the fish oil, I think everyone should get the amount of at least 3,500 milligrams every week. But remember, these are fat soluble. So we don't just take them and they disappear overnight, these fatty acids. So, you know, we can get 1,000 milligrams 3 days a week. We don't have to ingest them every single day. Fish oil is sold to be taken on a daily basis just because, you know, once we form a habit with something, and we know compliance with nutrients is hard. So that would just makes it easier. But, you know, the studies that we're looking at, you know, 500 to max 1,000 milligrams of EPA DHA is all we need for disease prevention. So I think that's really important that we keep it in our diets, but we don't have to overdo it. And, you know, sustainability and taking care of the earth is also important, so that it's around for everybody when they need it. I see this. Do you want me to take the sardine question? How can we eat sardines that would make them more palatable? I think sardines is like scotch. You have to acquire a taste for it. you know, my grandmother owned a general store when I was growing up, and she introduced me to sardines as a child, and she would put vinegar on sardines. And that makes them actually quite good. And it cuts the fish taste a little bit if you don't really like that. The ones that are packed, you can get them packed in fish oil or olive oil or water. So you might experiment a little bit and find the one that you find the most palatable. I often, for lunch, just open a tin of sardines and make myself a giant salad with as many veggies that are, I eat whatever's in my refrigerator. Whatever's in the refrigerator goes in my salad. And then I just put the sardines right in the salad, too. And with a little lemon juice over them, I think they're quite palatable. But I happen to like the taste. So I think you need to just play with them until you find a way, because they're a great source, just a great nutrient source. And what can you do to suppress your appetite? I think that one of the best things you can do to suppress your appetite is to get on some kind of regular eating schedule. Don't skip breakfast, whatever you do, have some breakfast. And, you know, if you determine the amount of calories that you want to live on a daily basis that are going to keep you healthy for as long as possible, and then just know that if you eat a snack between your main meals that's healthy, you won't be so hungry, so you won't get carried away and eat a lot of junk food.
This is Liz from Macular Degeneration Foundation. Ellen, is it true if we're eating the foods that are good for us, we don't have to worry about appetite suppressant because we're not going to overeat?
I really don't know the answer to that, frankly. I wish we would all just eat foods that are good for us all the time. Unfortunately, that gets into economic issues. Foods that are bad for us are cheap, and that's the sad part of the food industry right now. And, you know, this past year has been hard for a lot of families economically. And if they have a lot of people to feed, a lot of mouths to feed, they go right to the center of that supermarket and buy that junk food because it's affordable. Really good food costs money. So it's so sad that, you know, you can go get a whole Big Mac meal that has about 1,500 calories in it for $5 or less in today's world. So if your budget is really strained, that's what people are doing. So, you know, obesity is now considered an epidemic in this country. I've been quoting that 65% of the population in the United States is overweight. Well, the guys yesterday that were lecturing corrected me and said, no, it's 70% now. And this has all happened in the past 20 years. So as the cost of food, of really good food, goes up, well, you know, we know that the people with the least amount of money are going to continue to eat the worst diets. So, here's one more question I see here. Is lutein an important supplement for low vision? You bet it is. There's certainly enough science out there now to prove that lutein is important for the macular pigment. And, you know, ladies, it's important for a lot of things. It keeps our skin healthier. And one more thing that I do want you to know about lutein. The more extra weight that you carry, the more lutein you need, because adipose tissue pulls off lutein. So if you are overweight, look for supplements that contain a real high amount of lutein, because otherwise it's not going to be getting to your eye. All right. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to turn it over to Ed, and he'll take it from here.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ellen. I really appreciate that information. And I do want to direct everyone back to mdsupport.org if you have any other further questions, or certainly contact Dan through the website and the support group, because there's so much information there from not only other speakers, but Ellen has been here a number of times, as you know, and she's just been a wealth of information. And we really appreciate all that you've been contributing to not only us, but also to future generations, too. Well, it's time to wrap it up. I thank everyone, myself personally, and I want to say keep looking up. And now, Dan, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Dr. Huggett and Ellen Troyer, and our special guest again today, Liz Trojanic from the MD Foundation, who we want to thank again, as we do every month, for making this all possible by her generous funding of the IMDSG. We'll be back again into the throes of the meeting now, with the promise of bringing some new information and guest speakers to you at future sessions of the International Macular Degeneration Support Group. Until next month, when Dr. Gerald Chater will provide us with a look at the future of research and treatment, take care of yourselves and each other. Thank you for coming.